Our guest, Robert Edsel, is the founder and chairman of the Monuments Men Foundation. He tells the true stories of the 11 men and one woman who risked their lives to preserve churches, libraries, monuments, and works of art that we travel to Europe to enjoy today. His latest book is appropriate for school-age readers, and it's called The Greatest Treasure Hunt in History. I would think World War II was kind of a new ballgame as far as destruction of great art, because previously, you know, battles would be fought on a battlefield, and now battles were fought by demoralizing entire societies by firebombing them, you know, dropping so many bombs on them that the cities are destroyed. And of course, when it's all out war, you don't really care about this church compared to that gallery or this palace. World War II was entering into a new stage of destruction of culture, wasn't it?
You're absolutely right. And this was the great realization of George Stout, who was a conservator of works of art at the Fogg Museum at Harvard, who was old enough he'd fought the last year of World War I, and he watched with horror the events you described in Spain's Civil War with the advent of firebombing, and realized, convinced that there was going to be a Second World War, that the great risk here was that the Allies might win the war, but in the process become the goats of history for destroying all of the great treasures of Western civilization. So the initial effort was to try and work with Allied commanders to steer bombing away from cultural treasures and monuments. Of course, these men and women had been educated at institutions in Europe. They knew where these things were. But as they got on the ground, you know, it's the difference between planning things on paper and then getting there physically and having to wing it, because there was so much destruction. There really was no rule book at that stage. And when you consider all that they did save, it's really miraculous that we can go to these museums today, as you said, and have them appear largely as they did before the war. But of course, they couldn't have looked like that from 1939 to 1945.
And you're dealing with a crazed dictator whose attitude was, I know when you take the Great Palace in Munich, the residence, his attitude was, this is going to get destroyed. Let's take photographs so after the war we can rebuild it accurately. You know, it just seems like a reckless way to take care of your patrimony. But I guess those photographs actually were ultimately helpful, because the residence was bombed and today it's rebuilt according to the photographs that Hitler's men took.
Well, you're right. And that palace was actually saved by a monuments man, John Skelton, who there's a wonderful watercolor drawing of him in one of the hallways of the Palais Residence, in recognition of the fact that he single-handedly rolled lumber down a river and drove along the river, watching it to make sure no one was going to steal it, to build a temporary roof over the great Steppenhaus stairwell there where Tiepolo's extraordinary fresco, I mean, something, as you so well know, on par with Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel ceiling. And it survived today because of him.
The Ponte Vecchio in Florence was famously saved by some commander that talked the Germans into bombing areas around the bridge rather than the bridge itself, because they had to stop people from being able to cross over it. And the beautiful city of Colmar, just by the luck of who was making decisions, who might appreciate that town, escaped the destruction while neighboring towns were totally destroyed in the war. Have you found inspirational stories like that across Europe?
Oh, it goes on and on. And one of our great monuments men, Harry Ettlinger, who passed in late November, 92 years old, a German-born Jew that immigrated to the United States when he was 13 years old. He had to flee his own country. He was from the town of Karlsruhe. He lived three blocks away from the museum there, an important museum, and was never able to visit because it was off-limit to Jews. And he was drafted into the army at 18, was headed for the Battle of Bulge at 19, and on his birthday, they pulled him out of the truck Congo, and he didn't know why for several months, but they needed translators, German speakers, to look through documents to indicate where missing works of art might be, and that was how he became a monuments man. And the extraordinary conclusion of his story, in later 1945, he descended into a salt mine in Kokendorf, and among the thousands of works of art he found there was a self-portrait by Rembrandt, the most important painting from the hometown that was three blocks from where he grew up that he'd never been able to see. And a few years ago, the town invited him back as their guest to thank him for what he'd done to save the works in Karlsruhe, and they'd put labels on all the paintings in the museum that had been found in the salt mine by Harry Ettlinger and the others, and it was practically every painting in the museum.
Oh, and it was an honor to talk to Harry Ettlinger with you on a previous interview that we did here on our show, and people can check that out in our archives.
We have to respect each other human beings, and we have to respect each other in our culture, or we will no longer exist as an organized form of civilization.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Robert Edsall. He's the author of The Greatest Treasure Hunt in History, The Story of the Monuments Men. So, Robert, the last of the Monuments Men with Harry Ettlinger have passed away. It's been a long time since 1951 when their immediate work was finished in the field in Europe. But the Monuments Men Foundation continues to work with that same sort of mission. How's the mission going on today? What's the ongoing work of the organization?
The Monuments Men Foundation has had some tremendous successes here recently. In 2015, as a consequence of a bill that we were successful in getting passed in Congress, no small feat, signed into law by President Obama, the Monuments Men and Women of all 14 nations received the Congressional Gold Medal at the Capitol, the highest civilian honor our nation awards. That was a joyous moment to see four monuments officers there. Harry Ettlinger received it on behalf of all the Monuments Men and Women. We have continued to locate and return missing works of art, from tapestries to important paintings, drawings, sculpture, a vase, to countries in Western Europe, some collectors, some have gone to our own national archives in Washington, D.C. We receive a lot of tips and leads from people that may have something brought home by a soldier at the end of World War II. Our toll-free tip line is 1-866-994-4278. It's World War II art.
You know, what's interesting is the Great Generation has passed, and there were people in the Great Generation who probably did a little looting on their own, and they've got these treasures hidden away in boxes or up in their attic, and now their kids inherit this stuff, and it might have historical value. It might need to go back into the public treasure chest. And have you found that this is actually a potential for locating some of this art?
Oh, well, the Monuments Men Foundation's returned some 30 objects, and every single one of them was a circumstance you described, a soldier that brought it home, won it in a poker game.
Yeah.
Kids found it, didn't know what it was, were concerned maybe they're going to get in trouble and contacted us. And the foundation doesn't charge anybody for its work. We just want to illuminate the path home and get these things back where they belong.
What's that phone number again?
It's 1-866-994-4278, which is W-W-I-I-A-R-T.
And I understand that you've been working with a very, very popular World War II museum in New Orleans.
The National World War II Museum in New Orleans, the third most popular museum in the United States, according to TripAdvisor, the largest tourist draw in New Orleans, certainly. It's an extraordinary place. Later in this year, they will break ground in their capstone building, part of their $400 million campus, the Liberation Pavilion. And on the ground floor, we're recreating a salt mine to have what will be called the Monuments Men Gallery and preserve these men and women's remarkable experience as authentically as we can for some of the 750,000 visitors that walk through that museum every year.
Nice. Robert Edsall is our guest on Travel with Rick Steves. His latest work tells the stories of the World War II Monuments Men to a new generation of readers, and it's called The Greatest Treasure Hunt in History. There's more about the ongoing work of the Monuments Men Foundation, including a list and photos of still missing artworks at monumentsmenfoundation.org. It's hard to imagine during World War II that there was a scramble to move to protection or to loot and take to Berlin or to just destroy all this great art in Europe. Robert, when you think about this turmoil relating to the art, you've got amazing images. I mean, in your book, there's a picture of the Winged Victory, the victory of Samothrace, a Napoleon, a sled, being pulled out of the Louvre Museum. What was going on there?
The curators at the museum were very fearful that Allied bombing might hit the roof of the Louvre and damage this extraordinarily fragile sculpture. It looks like it's one piece of marble, but it's actually thousands of shards of marble that are pieced together. And they lowered it on wooden skids down the central stairwell of the Louvre, as you mentioned, and then crated it up and moved it on several occasions to villas outside or to chateaux outside the city of Paris to try and keep it safe.
And that fragile, precious piece of over 2,000-year-old sculpture, it survived that trip and it ended up back in its spot, the same spot at the top of the stairway in the Louvre.
It did. And, you know, this was repeated at museums throughout Europe, the Michelangelo's great sculpture of David, 16 feet tall, inside the Accademia. Florentine officials worried that that might be damaged by the roof collapsing, so they entombed it in brick, a photo I have in my new book. Looks like a missile silo.
David in brick.
Yes, it looks just like a missile silo, and the sculpture we refer to as the slaves in the foreground are also entombed in brick.
Not to be outdone, Leonardo's Last Supper was entombed in sandbags.
Truly, we throw the word miracle around in society today, but that's a miracle that that painting survived. An Allied bomb landed some 88 feet east of the east wall of the refectory. It obliterated the east wall. The roof collapsed. The painting and the wall survived only because Milanese officials had placed wooden scaffolding supported by metal braces and sandbags on both sides of the north wall on the what-if chance some vibration might damage the wall, never mind a bomb landing there. And it would be 2 years before anybody would know, once they removed all these things, was the wall going to stand or was it going to collapse?
The Mona Lisa even was evacuated, wasn't it?
It was taken out of Paris in an ambulance. It was the only work of art that had its own form of transportation, and they, in fact, sealed it up so tightly in the back of the ambulance it almost suffocated the custodian that was with the painting. And not to be outdone, that picture was moved on five more occasions during the war to try and keep it out of harm's way and theft. So this was repeated over and over at the Castle of Neuschwanstein, where some 22,000 important works of art stolen from France were hidden that the monument's men found. Works from the Uffizi and the Pitti Palace hidden in a jail cell in northern Italy, and also a carriage house, some of the great sculpture by Michelangelo and Donatello. So when we go to these museums today in Europe and stand in front of these masterpieces, virtually every one of them was hidden somewhere, whether it was stolen or not, in some obscure place far distance from what you'd think of as a safe place for a fragile work of art.
As this whole story starts to come together in my mind, it's like everybody's scrambling, knowing that destruction is on its way, and people are squirreling things away, filling the basements of Neuschwanstein, cutting precious paintings out of their frames and rolling it up like carpets and tucking it away over here. Even in Berlin, you've got a photograph of this giant subterranean space outside of town.
In the town of Merkers, there was a salt mine. Many of these salt mines have been worked for 1,000 years. And Germans, worried about the Soviet Red Army overtaking Berlin, evacuated at the last minute some of the most important works of art in history, including the bust of Nefertiti, that were moved to this salt mine 2,500 feet below ground, along with the entire contents of the German Reichsbank, basically the equivalent of finding Fort Knox underground. And the monument's men had a clue that took them beneath ground, and they found what today would be worth almost $8 billion worth of gold. And more value than that in these great paintings and sculpture that today occupy Museum Island, the great museums in Berlin.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Robert Edsall. His book is The Greatest Treasure Hunt in History. It tells the story of the Monuments Men and how they did so much to save the great art treasures of our Western civilization. Robert, when you look back, of course it was a scramble, and everybody was trying to just save their lives with all this horrific World War II action. But was there enough money dedicated and energy dedicated to minimize the damage to all of this art when all the dust was settled? Or do you just kind of weep as a person who appreciates and love art for the lost opportunities? Had they had a little more money and energy to do the job? It seems like they did a remarkable job.
They did, and it's easy to be critical. I think we have to say no army, no government had ever tried to comprehensively fight a war on the one hand and think about protecting cultural treasures at the same time. This was unprecedented. So the mere fact that the Allies, led by the United States and Great Britain, even thought of it and dedicated resources to it is in and of itself the high watermark for the protection of cultural treasures in the history of civilization. Over and above that, at the end of the war, when they found and returned ultimately 4 million stolen objects, the point was that they did return them. In a break with thousands of years of civilization, to the victors did not belong the spoils of war. And that is something to celebrate and be very, very proud of as an American.
Because a nation in the heat of combat can screw up when it comes to taking care of great art treasures. When the United States was involved in the Iraq War, art historians knew that the great, great museum in Baghdad would be at risk. And the way I understand it, we put our energy into protecting the oil fields more than in protecting the art.
Well, you're right. You're completely right. In 2003, we don't get into the whether we should or shouldn't have been into Iraq. The question simply is, if you're an invading force, what responsibility do you have to protect not just their museum, but their national archives, their national library? And I think the answer among people on both sides of the aisle is the answer is it's absolute. You are the policing force. You have to do that. And this is what motivated the creation of the Monuments Men Foundation, was to make sure that the high watermark that was set during World War II with a handful of men and a couple of women with no tools of technology, that they could do what they did in a war that claimed the lives of 65 million people. Surely we could do a better job in conflicts today. And that message is why I've written these books, why we worked so hard to have a film made by George Clooney, and to raise the awareness in Washington among elected and appointed leaders to not make those mistakes that we made in Iraq in 2003.
Because that was a huge loss in Iraq for all of us.
It was, and it's not just a loss of the physical treasures, but we upset and lost the goodwill of a billion people around the world that fell victim to stories that said Americans don't care about this because it's Islamic cultural treasures are not part of our heritage. That's nonsense. We didn't think about it. If they'd have been Judeo-Christian treasures, we would have made the same mistakes. So it's important to win over people. And I think what we've learned through the experience of the Monuments Men is if you show respect for their cultural treasures, you've gone a long way towards demonstrating good faith.
Is a piece of art worth a human dying for?
It's a great question, and it's a dramatic question. And of course, especially with younger audiences, there seems something romantic about running into a fire and running out with a painting, in particular if it was, say, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa. But I think Monuments Man Dean Keller, who I profile in my new book, really said it best, that no work of art is worth the life of a single American boy, but risking your life for a cause is absolutely worth it. So the two monuments officers that were killed, they didn't want to die. They didn't want to lose their lives any more than any of the soldiers did. But they believed that preserving these cultural treasures for future generations was a cause worth fighting for and risking your life.
Because these things of beauty are things that really define us as a civilization.
They're the guideposts on the road of civilization's path that remind us who we are, and we would be a lesser civilization without these things of beauty. And of course, they haven't survived by accident. Right. People before us made sure and risked their lives that future generations would be able to enjoy them.
And when we travel through Europe and when we wait in line to see those great museums and we are just inspired by the beautiful works of people over the centuries, we can be thankful for the Monuments Men. Robert Edsel, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your work with the Monuments Men, and best wishes with your book, The Greatest Treasure Hunt in History.
Thank you, Rick.
For a change of pace, let's consider a summer road trip or maybe a weekend getaway to an exciting city. We look at some of the sights you can enjoy in San Francisco. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves. We're at 877-333-RICK.